It's true. I was here actually almost exactly 2 years ago, and I spoke about STS-77. After I'd done that, I went back to the Johnson Space Center and NASA and had to think about what was I going to do next. At that time, we had a program where we were undertaking long-duration space flights in collaboration with the Russians on board the Mir space station. And there were 7 flights planned, and 7 astronauts had already been chosen. But they were looking for someone to act as a backup to the last flight. And so I thought, well, I'll go and try that. I think that'd be interesting. I won't get a flight out of it, but I'll get to go through basic cosmonaut training, something which I'd never in my wildest dreams expected that I could do, and just enjoy the experience. So I found in the early part of last year that I was sent to the Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center, which is just outside Star City in Moscow, just outside Moscow in a place called Star City, which is the center where cosmonauts have traditionally been trained. And I undertook the training program that they provide for flight on this vehicle here, which is, of course, the Mir space station. The station itself is actually very large. It really consists of 4 modules that are joined together at a common node here in a kind of a cruciform shape, and then a central or core module here. This core module was launched 12 years ago, and people say the Mir space station is very old. Well, it's true that the core module is 12 years old, but these other modules are actually quite recent. In fact, this module here, which is not labeled, is called Priroda, which in Russian means nature, is only 2 years old. And this module here, which is Spectre, is, I think, only 3 or 4 years old. This is the module here that was damaged by a collision with a cargo vessel last year and led to the depressurization problem they had. The cargo vessel that did that is called Progress, and it's one of these small vessels that you see here docked at the end of the space station. And this is a vessel that's used to come up to the space station periodically and resupply it with food and water and things like that. It carries no crew. To carry the crew, they use this vehicle up here, which you can barely see in this rendition. And this is called a Soyuz capsule. And this is the basic workhorse of the Soviet space program in the 70s and of the Russian space program now. It carries 3 people launched out of Kazakhstan and docks with the space station and then returns them to Earth. And so when I was in Russia, I was trained in the operations of this whole space station and how to fly in one of these Soyuz capsules. The astronauts that went to Mir went up and back on the space shuttle, but the Soyuz capsule was provided there as an emergency return vehicle in the event that something would go wrong on the station. You could get into the Soyuz and come home. It was basically a lifeboat. You'll see the other modules here, the Kristall module there, Kvant 1 module here. You see all the solar panels that are used for providing electricity to the vehicle. And you see here this brown object here. This is the docking module, and it's to this module that the space shuttle comes and docks and provides access into the space station, and you'll see that shortly. After I volunteered for this assignment, not actually expecting to fly, I found myself in Russia last year, and here's a picture of Red Square. To begin the training program at this site here, which is Star City. This is the training center that was built about 30 years ago in the height of the Cold War to train all the cosmonauts for space flight. It's in the Birch Forest, about 30 miles outside Moscow. It's really actually quite a pretty spot. I was there along with the other Phase 1 astronauts. This program that we flew on is called Phase 1 because it's the first phase of the space station program. You'll hear me refer to it as the Phase 1 program. And here we are in front of a statue of Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space, after whom the training center is named. Here's Mike Fall, who flew last year, Wendy Lawrence, who was scheduled to fly in September of last year, myself, Jim Voss, both of us were there as backup astronauts, and Dave Wolf, who was scheduled to be the last person to fly on Mir. We undertook basic cosmonaut training, and that provides the kind of elements that I'd gone through in astronaut training, like learning to function in weightlessness, for example. To do that, they use this military transport plane, an Ilyushin 76 aircraft, which flies parabolic loops in the sky, much like our aircraft in Houston, and we use that to learn how to function in weightlessness. And here you see I'm practicing donning and doffing the Russian spacesuit in zero gravity conditions. In the event that we had to do an emergency landing in the Soyuz capsule, you might end up landing in some very remote area where it could be Arctic conditions. It's a possibility. So we had to learn how to survive in Arctic conditions in the event that we'd land somewhere there and search and rescue forces would not be able to get to us. So they sent us to a place in north of Siberia to undertake this. And believe it or not, there is a place north of Siberia you can go to. It's above the Arctic Circle. And here we were preparing for our training out there on the ice floe. This is actually on the Arctic Ocean here. This is the Soyuz capsule. And what they did is they put us in this Soyuz capsule and went away and left us. They said, all right, we'll be back in 2 days. And you have to survive out there. You have a few survival rations and you have some winter gear, but you basically have to survive. And it's really difficult. The temperature when we did this, March of last year, was minus 40 degrees Celsius. It was really cold. And they taught us the skills that you need to survive in these kinds of unusual conditions, including building an igloo. And that's what these structures here are. They're not mounds of snow. They're actually igloos. So I actually know how to build an igloo. That's a skill that I'm confident I can use later in life. We survived by gathering wood. We actually found that there was some driftwood on the banks of the Arctic Ocean. We would gather that up and built a fire, and we sat around the fire to try and keep warm all that time. In fact, we had to sit so close to the fire to keep warm, we actually burned all the clothing that we had. It was a fascinating experience. We also dug a snow cave make a place to keep warm, and we would take the parachute from the Soyuz capsule and wrap ourselves up and go into the snow cave to try and keep warm. It didn't really work, though. We still got very cold. Another part of the training was to develop the equipment that I would need in my flight. And here you see I'm being measured for the seat that they use in the Soyuz capsule. The seat has to conform to your body very closely because you take quite a lot of G-forces. And the way they do this is they put you in this this sort of tub here, which is like a bathtub, and you crouch in the sitting position in the Soyuz with legs up there. It's not a very comfortable position because there's not much room in the Soyuz. Then they pour plaster of Paris around your body and make a cast of you. And it's really a weird sensation to feel this plaster forming all around your body and solidifying. It's a very strange sensation, but that's how they make the seat, make sure that the seat will fit you perfectly. The suit that we use is shown here. This is the Russian spacesuit, and they custom-built a suit like that for me and then tested it by putting me in this chamber here, which is actually a vacuum chamber, and then they would pump the air out of the chamber while I'm in the suit to test the integrity of the suit, and it worked out fine. I hadn't realized at the time how controversial, though, this particular suit would become in the first days of the flight. I talked about the winter survival problems we had to do and the fact that we could do a bailout in winter conditions. Of course, you could also end up doing a landing, a splash landing, somewhere in the ocean in an emergency. And so they trained us for that. And to do that, they took us to the Black Sea in summer in the Soyuz capsule here. And we put on the spacesuits and got into the capsule, which was then lowered over the side of the boat and dragged away. Then we had to, inside the Soyuz capsule, change out of our spacesuits, put on survival gear and flotation equipment, then open the hatch and get out. And you think, well, that's no big deal, but you've got to imagine there's three people in a capsule trying to do that, and they're in a room that's smaller probably than the front seat of most cars, and they're taking off these heavy spacesuits and donning this other equipment, and it's really quite a workout. Once you come out of the capsule, then you have to use signal flares and so on to signal search and rescue forces, helicopters, come and get you and lift you out of the water. When I did this with two other cosmonauts. I actually did it with Dalajan Sharapov here, who was a young cosmonaut from Uzbekistan. And we didn't know it at the time, but he was actually being assigned to a shuttle flight. And quite coincidentally and unknown to us, he and I flew together
on STS 89 up to Mir as the flight he was assigned to. But we didn't know it at this time, which was June of last year. In fact, I didn't even know that I was going to fly. I was doing this training, not expecting to get a flight out of it because I hadn't been assigned. I was just a backup. The other part of survival training I mentioned, of course, is the helicopter lift. And we did this near Star City. And here you see myself with Wendy Lawrence, who was assigned to the second last Mir flight. And we were training there on the procedures you use to be retrieved by a helicopter, as you see here, and hold up on a hoist into the helicopter. And this is the kind of procedure you use once you've landed somewhere and the helicopters find you, then they pull you out of the woods or pull you out of the water, kinds of procedures. The final part of the training that I went through was training for a spacewalk. There was not a spacewalk scheduled for the increment that I was going to fly if I had as a backup. But they wanted everyone to be trained in the use of the Russian spacesuit as a contingency measure in the event that there was going to be a need to do a spacewalk, or an EVA as we call it. I would know how the Russian spacesuit worked and be ready to go and do that. And here you see I'm climbing into the Russian spacesuit. It's very different from the US spacesuit, which is made in pieces and you put on a bit like a suit. This Russian spacesuit is a single piece. And you get into it in the back, and it has this door on the back, like the door of a refrigerator, and you open this door and you climb in and then pull this door shut behind you, and it's all a single-piece suit. And that's what I'm learning to do here. There I am in the suit. They're putting weights on me and lifting me up to lower me into the water, because as we do in Houston, they use tanks like this of water to simulate zero gravity. So they lower you down into the water and you float around in the spacesuit, and that way it simulates the effects, the same kind of behavior you'd have if you were actually doing a spacewalk in zero gravity. And that's what this training was here. We also trained in the use of those suits in the zero gravity aircraft that I mentioned. And here you see myself and Dave Wolf, who's above me there, learning to get in and out of this suit in zero gravity. Because to do these functions, like taking on and off a spacesuit and getting in and out of a spacesuit, when you do them, you might take them for granted if you do them here on the Earth. But to do them in zero gravity is a much more difficult task because you're floating. So we had to train how to do that, and that's what we were doing here.